Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to a special episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing, but we love writers, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Today, we're just bringing him right out. It's our first ever three-time guest. And he was our first ever second-time guest, so he's getting all the honors. This man was my boss for many years. He ran Family Guy through what I think was its funniest period. He then became president of the Writers Guild, and you may remember he brought the agencies to their knees over packaging, and I love saying that because Matt Rice hates it so much. He's now a member of the WGA negotiating board. We're going to be talking to him a lot about that, and since we've last spoken, he's won awards for his excellent film Honor Society, which we're not here to promote. That's not what today is about, but that did happen in the interim, so it felt worth mentioning, and it's a great movie. I loved it so much. Please welcome back Mr. David Goodman. David, thank you for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, as always.
Oh, boy, let's take that again. David, welcome back. Thank you for being here today.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Now there's a question mark. Well, we're excited to talk to you about what's going on with the strike. And I know Goldie had a question that he wanted to ask you when we get started here today.
What?
Oh.
No, Goldie. You already blew it. We already blew the joke. There's no question.
Oh. Wait. First joke of the day.
Wait, we're not doing that today, JC. That's not what this is about today.
No, you were supposed to list his qualifications and say, but you're here to promote your movie.
Oh, wow.
I sent you a text about this.
Wow. Holy,
that was the joke that he's not allowed to because we're in the guild and on strike.
Unlucky three. The whole
show
falls apart.
And then instead, you just threw to me awkwardly after you half made the joke.
Guys, we gotta have solidarity here. We've gotta have solidarity.
I know.
You guys' unity is really important.
This is tearing me apart.
Hold on.
Moving on.
Moving. There he is. David talking to himself.
That's familiar.
So obviously, David, since we last had you here, and you were kind enough in week one of the strike to come on and talk about it.
Day one.
There have been some major developments. I'm sure everybody knows by now that the Screen Actors Guild has joined us on the picket line striking against...
Oh, wait, those aren't writers?
No, there's way better looking.
I thought there
Goldie.
Were just like a lot of writers I didn't know about. Those are actors?
Yeah, a lot of... Right. When have you seen gorgeous writers? That has never happened.
It looks like a hot refugee camp.
Very hot. Hot in double meaning of hot.
Right.
So, David, since SAG has joined, it really feels like that's a big shot in the arm for the whole strike situation. What was your take on them coming out on strike, and how do you think that helps us?
Well, I think that it is. It's a game changer. The two unions haven't been on strike at the same time for, 50 years however long ago it was. It was 1960, I think.
Yeah, Reagan was in charge then.
Reagan was president of the Screen Actors Guild. Ronald Reagan was president of the Screen Actors Guild and was president when they went on strike.
Is this you launching your campaign for president?
That's unfortunately maybe my only career option, but I kid the industry. It's huge, and really what it really speaks to is the AMTTP, the companies that we were negotiating with, this organization that represents the companies, played out a strategy that they've done before, which is to go, we went out on strike, so they pretended to ignore us and negotiate a deal with DGA, and DGA feels they got a good deal for themselves, and then they went into negotiations with SAG, and they did not expect that SAG was going to go out. But a lot of the issues that writers are facing, actors are facing, and they have a lot more of their own issues about making a living as an actor. And SAG has realized that they weren't going to get what they needed for their membership unless they went out, that they were being stonewalled by the AMPTP. And they went out. And it's amazing. And it's an amazing, I'm very impressed with how they organize themselves and are now joining us on the picket line. I mean, they have their, weirdly, it's like we're unified in the sense that we're fighting the companies, but they have their strike and we have ours. I'm very happy for that union that, it's a struggle. Strikes are difficult things, but they're standing up for themselves, and they're going to get a much better deal than they would have if they hadn't gone to strike, which is what's going to happen.
Well, let me ask you this: as a member of both unions, would you call me a hero or two heroes?
It's funny because I'm a member of both unions too. And I hadn't spent any time thinking about that, but it's good. It's good now to think, maybe.
Five heroes on
here? We have six heroes on here. And JC, you're a hero as well, JC. Aww. So let's not shortchange you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
But so, David, you said in that first answer that while SAG and the WGA do definitely have some overlap in terms of the issues we're both fighting for, they are separate strikes.
Yes.
So this leads to another question. Is there a thought or an idea that one will not happen without the other? Like, does our solidarity reach a point where it's like, well, we're not going to sign off on it until you handle the actors, or would the actors say, we're not going to sign off on our deal until you handle the writers? Is that something you've been talking about?
I mean, the staffs of the two unions talk, there's coordination, there's discussion, there's a lot of communication. I don't think that those are things that have been talked about, because right now the companies aren't negotiating with either one of us. Right. But I think that the more important takeaway is that the companies recognize they've got to make a deal with somebody.
Yeah.
and so one union will be able to draft off the deal of the other, however that comes to pass.
Right. And so now, I posted a picture on Instagram the other day of the Black Knight from Monty Python with his arms and legs cut off. And now this isn't a promo for
Likes are we talking?
This isn't a promo for my wildly entertaining Instagram. It's not a promo for my Instagram.
It's not like, oh, Lifesavers presents the cut up knight.
Do more people listen to the podcast than are on your Instagram? Is that do you know?
I think it's close. It's right around the same.
And there's no overlap. There's no overlap.
there's some overlap. So,
do you ever see a turtle race in a bar?
Yeah, that's kind of what we're dealing with here.
Okay, picture this: it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But the question is, is that a fair assessment of what the AMPTP has done to themselves? Did they make a big tactical blunder by assuming that they could isolate one union, and instead now they have two very strong unions kind of fighting against them?
I think that the way I look at it is that they were disconnected from really what was going on the ground, and that the company CEOs stayed out of it. We're sort of like, let Carol Lombardini and the AMPTP do their job, which they have been very good at doing for a long time, of making sure we don't get paid very much. And I mean, they're very good at it. She's an excellent negotiator. However, in this case, things had changed so much, and they were really disconnected from how people who work in Hollywood were feeling about their futures, about their livelihoods. And the unions, both unions, realized they had to do something. But I think it was more a illustration of how disconnected they were. Now, you know, the CEOs are going to have to, like, get involved. They're going to have to say, all right, we need a deal here. I mean, it's so interesting, some of the narratives that would come out, the sort of fear-mongering narratives that, oh, the companies can ride this out. Oh, the companies don't care about strikes, that they'll be fine. Netflix stock dropped precipitously the other day. The best sign that picketing matters is that Universal cut down the trees in front of where we were picketing to get rid of shade.
That's humane.
Is that a real, because part of me saw that and the internet traffic and thought this was Coney all over again, and this was an internet trap to get people to tweet about it and stuff, and then they would go, no, the city does that, you fucking idiots. Like, but no, that's a real thing. Like, we should talk about that for a second, right?
It seems to be real that they didn't get a permit,
right,
that it was immediately investigated, and then they didn't like the bad PR, so they sent tents and water for the picketers. But why did they do it in the first place?
Yeah.
That it's like a bad time of year to cut down the trees because that's like, it's like the nesting season.
I just want to, like, for people who aren't quite familiar with what we're talking about, there were these trees on the picket line path with significant foliage and overhang. They were very nice trees. And they took such a hatchet to them. Like, it's an evil cartoon version of trimming a tree on the hottest day of the year. It's like, let's do everything but murder, like, four fucking trees in the most cartoonish way possible so that these people can have no shade. I mean, and I wanted to buy a banner that said, brought to you by the guys who did Peacock. Because that to me, it's the Peacock version of cutting a tree. Where, like, so I thought maybe that this was kind of an example of the internet kind of taking one thing and not, but it's real. It seems like it seems like there was a meeting and they did this.
I can't figure out how they came to that decision. They don't usually do it this time of year. It affects the nesting in the trees. It's like there's the environmental aspect of it, and they're ripping up the sidewalks at Universal. It does really feel like that they hate the picketing.
And you could get fined. Yeah. Like, you know, I was reading that supposedly you might have to replace those trees with full adult trees. Yeah. And the cost of that could run $1 million. Wow. And which would be so great.
You know, but it to me, like, this lesson that I think that we writers do sort of, I mean, they're out on the picket lines, we've got a lot of support, but then there can be a feeling, well, what is this picketing doing? What is it doing? And it's like, that's a sign right there that it's doing something. It's like, yes, they want this to stop. They, yes, hate this. Yeah. They hate driving, yeah, past, yeah, us with our picket signs. It's so great. You know, and so to me, that's like, that's really powerful.
Yeah.
That they would go to this much trouble and then realize, oh shit, this PR hit we took is not worth it. Send, yeah, them water in tents. Right. Like, the whole thing is such a great sign that this work that we're doing on the picket line matters.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I want to take you into a hypothetical meeting where we're now on their side. And we say, okay, they've been out there while the actors have joined them. This is not great for us. We will need to make some kind of deal at some point. You know, this seems to have increased their leverage. Maybe we go over the deal points again and see if there's anywhere where we can give a concession that they can get a PR win, that we can get a PR win. Then someone speaks up and says, what if we just cut down the fucking trees and bake them to death? And that got traction somehow in this meeting. That, like, yeah, we'll just fucking bake them. We'll bake them. What kind of meeting is this? What kind of organization? I was trying to explain to my mom, and by the way, I wanted to bring this up to you. You, David, how do you respond to my mom who said she doesn't want me out picketing because it's too hot? I'll sidebar that with you later. But to someone like,
I would
like
say to your mom, I would say to your mom, I would say to your mom, look, he's not that popular to begin with. This is what all of his friends are. You want him to have friends, right? Mom, you want him to have friends? This is where his friends are. How's that?
That's pretty good.
I don't know if she cares if I have friends. Because then I wouldn't need mommy as much. I was explaining to someone like my mom, who's outside the industry, though, but who you try to say, here's who I've been dealing with in a 25-plus year career. Like, this is the mentality of every time I feel like I go, I'm asking for something. And a lot of times it was for a show I was doing where it was, you know, like a particular piece of casting or a set or something where we had to spend some money. And this is such a perfect illustration of when it's bad, how bad it is, that they would just, rather than negotiate, just go, let's... I said this once in a meeting on a phone call, and it got me in a lot of trouble. But they're holding a gun to their own head and telling us they have a hostage. Where you're going, this is insane. Like, you're just going like this. You've got a gun to your temple, and you're going, I'll do it. And you're cutting, you're defacing your own studio to the street to bake us, rather than, like, engaging in the process with the people who create the product that built the studio.
Yes.
I think that there is a left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing aspect to this as well, too. Like, I don't know where those decisions get made. I don't know. I don't think they came from the top. I'm just going to be honest. I don't think the top of that company said, you know what, cut down the trees. I just don't think that happened. I think that there may have been some confusion. It might not have been about us. It may not have been. Like, I wasn't there. I don't know.
Right.
It certainly looks like it yeah. was. There yeah. seems to be a lot of evidence that somebody did it
with intent
to yeah. us. Yeah. But you don't know that these companies are so large. You don't know where these decisions are getting made.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point. And to that point, a couple weeks ago now, there was a quote that came out unattributed by a studio executive and stating that their plan was to make this strike last basically mm-hmm. until we lost our homes.
Right.
Now, and that, talk about bad PR and like evil Disney right. villains, literally. when you heard that, how did you feel about that?
You know, I read the article and it's hilarious because it's, I have a little bit of a different take on it than other. I don't think any CEO said that. I don't think anybody who's, you know, I think it was like an industry veteran who was intimate with the CEO's point of view, like that, right. like these anonymous sources. It's like that could be some.
It could have been Alec.
It could have been Alec.
Generate contact.
You know, industry veteran. I mean, you know, but I feel like that reporter. You know, he put together this article. He talked to a bunch of people who were CEO adjacent, but may not even be working for the companies. And yeah. and people talk out of their fucking asses all the time to get quoted in the industry press. And this guy wrote this article, and he put together all these quotes and to get clicks. And he succeeded.
Yes.
He succeeded. Like, that's all anybody's been talking about. And I, you know, they came out and denied. The AMPTP denied that this was anybody that they knew, and I believe them. I really don't think, you know, there were so many things in that article that didn't make any sense. Well, they were ready for this. They even before the WGA went out, this was the strategy. Bullshit.
Right.
Right. Bullshit. None of them wanted strikes. Yeah. So to me, that article is more like don't believe quotes that aren't attributed to anybody.
So you're saying that the plan isn't to make us all homeless and then cut down every tree in Griffith Park so we make to death as
these guys,
while we're homeless.
These CEOs are in the business of making stuff. You know, this is important to them, to make stuff. I know that, like, there's always this theory that they don't need to make stuff, that they can ride this out forever and starve us out. They got to make stuff. And again, looking at Netflix's stock drop, to me, that's a great sign right there. They've got to get back to the table and make a deal with us. And they recognize that. But they were playing out a strategy, which was DGA, SAG, hoping they would have those two deals to weaken us.
Okay.
But I look at that article and it's like, it's a bunch of fucking assholes giving anonymous quotes, wanting to feel important. There may be some people who said things like that, but that wasn't a strategy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a very generous perspective of you. And that's good to hear. But something that definitely was attributed was the interview with Bob Iger mm-hmm. from their Sun Valley conference, which was last week. And now, full transparency, Bob Iger is our overboss. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. he's not somebody who we want to come out here and malign necessarily. But the
well,
tone,
we don't have deals, so no one's our boss right now.
Right, that's true. That's
took
true.
Away all our deals. We're bossless.
We're Ronin. Just wandering
Ronin,
the countryside.
Yeah.
Oh, JC, I got you with that one. Huh?
Yeah.
But the tone of that interview seemed tone deaf to me. And
yes.
when in your leadership position with the WGA, is that something you're just like, yes, please keep coming on television and talking about this stuff? Because you sound very out of touch.
Look, I I think that that's been, I think, a problem for some of these people in charge. Is again a disconnect for what's happening on the ground. I think that SAG going out on strike probably surprised him, and his response was to say we're being unrealistic. Well,
this is reality.
We're out. You got to figure out some way to make a deal with us, whether we're being unrealistic or not. I think that that really is all of a piece. They they left it to the MPTP. The MPT is a broken system. It doesn't, it's not set up to address these very serious problems that these unions are having. And now they're sort of caught a little flat-footed. And that was a negotiating move probably on his part to say, you know, I'm not folding to this union pressure. Right. But I also know that all those guys have to now figure out, how do we get these guys off strike?
Yes. Well, can we talk about the executive compensation part of it for a second? Because I think one of the things that caused such resentment about that quote, saying we're unrealistic, was then it, right. you know, it comes out, he makes more in a day every day than the average mm-hmm. writer makes in a year. And then on the internet, I saw a picture of his yacht, which is like, you know, the size of the Love Boat or bigger. I mean, it's huge. And so, you know, one of the things is someone who, you know, reads the Wall Street Journal and whatever, like, executive compensation is in many ways a separate issue. It's like, and if that's your issue, you can buy a share of Disney stock and go to a shareholder meeting and yell about it, I feel like. But I will also say that they appear to have gotten themselves in a catch-22, where if their companies are doing as well as they say for them to merit this compensation,
right.
then certainly there's the money to pay us. Right. But if they're not doing well and they don't have the money to pay us, then certainly they don't merit this compensation.
Right.
And
right.
so what am I wrong in this assessment?
Well, I look at it like slightly differently. They somehow convinced the people that they work for that they're worth that money. Like they made an argument and we're worth this money. And I'm not going to argue with that, but I'm going to say we're making the same argument. We're worth this money.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so we're living in a very weird world. Like when I was growing up, there was one billionaire, J. Paul Getty. That was the one billionaire. Yeah. Now we have a billionaire class. And I think there's a class of people who are billionaires. And I think that what's changed in America is that we used to laud the businessman. The businessman was the hero. And now we're sort of seeing, well, no, there's a disparity here. They're getting overpaid in our minds, and we're being underpaid. And there's no way to justify having to make that much money. But having said that, they made an argument. They convinced a lot of people they were worth it. I can't do anything about that, but I can say we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So, well, last time you were on the podcast, I made an offer. You didn't take me up on it, which was I would go into any meeting and jump on a table and go completely apeshit.
All right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So that expired. The offer expired. Oh, didn't take
that's
it.
I was
going to
do it. I was going to do it.
Offer two. Right. New offer. I will settle this with a one-on-one yacht race with Bob Iger.
but first we have to buy you a yacht?
Well, no, we'll figure out the yacht part. Someone will give me a yacht. But would you they're on a dock cheering Iger. The writers are on a dock cheering me. We go to the open ocean. Yacht race for all the beans.
This was the plot of
you
summer.
You like these contests.
This was the plot of Summer Rental, by the way, with John Candy.
Wasn't there some? Didn't you challenge Travis Bowe or something to a strikeout thing?
Oh, don't
bring
that up.
How did that go?
Don't bring that up.
I got him to two strikes. I jammed him on a few inside pitches, and then he hit a few weak grounders.
That was all recorded.
So I feel like that your record there isn't enough for me to sort of go all in on.
Good, David. Thank you. Well, that offer aside, which I think would actually be fun, and Goldie, you'd have to, like John Candy, use your pants as the extra sail that would actually get you over the top. But let's talk for a minute, David, about because this is something that's really come up this time, and I think the AMPTP seems like they weren't necessarily ready for this part of it, which is the difference between the legacy media companies and the new streaming companies. It feels like there's a wide divide within the AMPTP where certain companies like the legacy media companies, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, have much more impetus to get this done than, say, a company like Amazon or Apple. Do you feel like there's friction within the AMPTP about that?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I don't know what happens in that room. I don't have any information that there is there. Speaking to what you're saying, though, it does seem logical that companies that are relying on the fall season, the fall network season, which feeds shows to their streaming platforms and does make a huge difference. Like I've heard like Abbott Elementary gets a couple million views on ABC where it airs. And then when it streams to Hulu, another 10 million people watch it. And so obviously that's very meaningful to that company. But having said that, even at those companies, Amazon and Apple, you still have a lot of executives who are there to make stuff. And so this matters to them too. So you hope that that pressure of like, we're not making anything anymore, we got to start making stuff, gets them back to the table, and it will. But I don't know that what goes on in that room is a bit of a black box, but I think that it does seem logical what you're saying, that there should be that conflict. On the other hand, you've got across the board, you know, experienced creative executives at those companies who are in the business to make stuff.
The last thing I want to do is sow any discord on that side at all. I wouldn't want to do that. But it would occur to me, were I working for a CBS or one of these legacy studios, that this strike was weakening me disproportionately. And is it potentially a strategy by an Apple or Amazon and a side benefit to weaken me, to lower my stock, to lower my purchase price, for them to swoop in and buy me at a friggin' discount because I allied myself mistakenly with them. And now I've just discounted myself to them for them to consolidate upward.
I love this.
That's
really
smart.
I think that's the absolutely possible.
Because if I'm Apple and I want to buy Sony, I just go, hey, let's let this go on like 8 months. And then, you know, they'll have no new product. They'll be worth, you know, market capitalization billions less. And we'll just swoop in and buy them for way less.
I think there will be probably some more consolidation of these companies. We'll get down to like 4 streamers at some point. I do think that the regulatory environment now is a little less friendly because of the Biden administration. So the idea of a merger like that might be harder. They may not be ready to do that quite yet. But I definitely think that is in the future. We will have more of this consolidation. I think whether that's actually a strategy in the strike is another question. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to it.
But me auditioning to be a CEO.
Right. You're just giving that out for free.
Making that argument that you're worth that kind of money.
Pretty good audition. Yeah.
I'm just saying these are the types of ideas Apple brings me in that, like, you know, I'm just a guy with ideas.
I know billionaires follow Alex's Instagram, but I don't know that they follow the podcast. So maybe we'll
get them. We're getting them. We'll get Mulaney back to snare a few more listeners. You brought up Biden. Yeah. Is there a hope on your end and the SAG end that we can get politicians a little more involved with this strike? Because I haven't heard too much from anyone. Obviously, the American government is set up to protect big business like Apple, like Amazon. Yeah. So they're probably hesitant to piss them off. But it does really feel like this is an issue of good and evil in a way. And it feels like somebody like a Biden or certainly a Bernie Sanders could be coming out and stumping a little more for us. Is this something that you guys talk about and work on and reach out to your politicians about?
I mean, we certainly talk to and look for that kind of support, and we get that kind of support. There is a way, though, I think that there's people who think that somehow if the government got involved in negotiation, that would help. The head of the Teamsters was at this rally the other day and said this thing. It was hilarious. It's much funnier with a Boston accent. but he was talking about, his name's Sean O'Brien, he was talking about like the government getting involved in their negotiation. And he said, you know, I just want to say to the government, the neighborhood I grew up in, two people have been in a fight and has nothing to do with you. Keep walking. again, much funnier with a Boston accent from a Teamster than from me. And that's the other thing too. Like there was all this talk before SAG went out, like the government was going to have government mediation, and a government mediator doesn't understand the issues the way we do, and all that's going to do is delay as we try to bring this person up to speed.
Right.
And there's also always going to be that kind of like false equivalency. Well, both sides are wrong here. And it's like, we've all known how to make a deal. Both sides understand we're going to have to make a deal that nobody's happy with. But right. I think that we don't need the government to come in. Anybody who says we do is just trying to stall, just trying to avoid the final deal making.
Right. But is there something in between those two, something in between silence and a government mediator that is right. somebody like a Bernie or a Biden just making a statement about it?
Well, Biden did make a statement saying he, the writers should get a good deal. I mean, very early on, he did. He it was great.
He couldn't hear it because he was falling down airplane stairs while he said
it. All right.
I don't think Biden listens to the podcast, does he?
No, not yet.
It's a Johnny joke. It's a Johnny joke.
There are no Johnny jokes? Oh, I see. There are no Johnny jokes
this
week?
It's a midstream Johnny joke.
No, this is all about you, David. This We're not doing Johnny jokes. Right. Nothing to do with us not wanting to write them.
We want that support and we're getting it. There is that issue of like a lot of these politicians get a lot of contributions from the CEOs of these companies. So yes. we may not see a lot of that support, but people are starting to see it. And now because of the studio's unwillingness to address the issues we've raised, we're seeing economic damage in certainly Los Angeles and New York, but also like Georgia and Illinois, where there's a lot of shooting done. I think we're going to start to see a little more probably government involvement of like, okay, guys, let's figure this out.
That's cool. Let's make a deal. That's good to know. Now, do you have any thoughts? I'm sure you've been asked this all the time, but it's on, I would say, all of the writers' minds and probably now most of the actors' minds. Do you have any sense as to when there's going to be a return to the negotiating table?
I don't have a sense right now. I do know that, that a lot of writers ask, what's the end game, or is there some way to let them know we're ready to go back and make a deal, or all these kinds of things, which they know. The companies know that they have to figure out how to make a deal, that they probably want to make sure that, again, they're not showing too much weakness when they come back to the room. They've got there may be back channeling, there may be attempts to sort of have off the record conversations. How do we do this? I think that we have a problem with the AMPTP in the sense of the way they negotiate. If we go back to that room with the AMPTP, we have to have some assurance that they're going to address all the things that they refused to address.
Yes.
And again, that's clear to them, but they also know we'd like this strike to end as soon as possible. We need the deal that's going to end it in the right way, that's going to address the issues we've raised. But the short answer is no, but the longer answer, which I'm going to keep rambling on, that the longer answer is that the companies understand, okay, that their strategy didn't work. Now they've got to figure out their new strategy to get back in the room with us. We're there, we're waiting, we'll be there as soon as they say, okay, let's talk. And we'll do it in, there are many different possibilities of how that could happen. And they probably, in some version, all of them will happen. So
When you do go back, which I think will happen eventually, do you anticipate that the side of the room that the writers are sitting on will have a roof? Or do you think that they'll have like taken the roof off and deprived you of any
sunlight.
Water?
These are the questions, the serious questions.
I don't know if I can answer that.
Okay, yeah, you're not prepared.
That'd be
to
predicting.
I mean, that might be part of the delay is they're trying to find a room that's half roof, half not roof, where one side's really hot, but the AC works on the other side. Well,
they can go where they used to film the Baseball Bunch, and they'll sit in the dugout, and the writers will have to sit on the first baseline. So now, this is not your first rodeo, as they say. You've been through this with the agencies.
It's definitely my last rodeo.
let's hope not. Well, let's hope so, in a way. But do you feel like this time around there's something different? Is there a lack of humanity in this round of not negotiations because they're not happening? But do you notice a difference between, say, the strike in 08, the conflict with the agencies, and this time? Is there something where they feel more entrenched?
No, I don't think so. This is the way they always are, unfortunately. What's different is on the labor side. We're in a different world than we used to be, in the sense that there really was a sense when you guys broke in, that like you were going to have like a career that was going to pay your bills, and you could have a life, and even with the ups and downs that we all have in our careers, we'd be able to ride those out and it would be fine. And that's completely changed. And it's changed not just for the writers, but for the actors. And the idea that unionism is become so much more important to people, not just in this industry, but in all these other industries, getting all this support from all these other unions, and we're supporting them. And it's really just sort of speaking to the haves and the have nots. And there are a lot of have nots in our union and in SAG. And this and so to me, that's what's changed, is that the business has changed in such a way that you can't make a living anymore the way we did. And it's like, all right, we've got to come together, and we've got to marshal our collective power to get a better deal for all of us. I mean, I'm sounding like I'm making a speech, but it's so
make a speech.
It's so it's so true, and you're sort of seeing it. Like, and the way the Teamsters have supported us, and IATSE, and the craft workers. I mean, it's amazing, and they all sort of see that like this fight is the tip of the spear, and that's the change. The change is that the business changed, and the people at the top of the business really were a little bit asleep at the wheel, and now they've got to deal with a bunch of really angry unions who are like saying, and workers saying, look, we're not asking for the world. Just let us make a living.
Right.
And that's what's changed.
Well, and that's an interesting point that you bring up, because you hear from, and Goldie was talking about his mom, and, you know, we all, I think, talk to people who are not in the business, and they have possibly an outdated perspective on what's going on, because you hear this thing of like, oh, you guys just want to be more rich. You know, you're rich already because you're working in Hollywood you want to be more rich. So can you just talk to that point a little bit? Because I know people outside of the industry tend to look at people in the industry as if we're spoiled rich people. Which, of course, you know, some of us are, but a lot of us aren't. And I think they're kind of missing that point.
Well, I mean, again, that's sort of around a lot of the issues we've raised in this negotiation, is that, like, there are writers who write for television shows. And again, we're writing on television shows that are making these companies huge amounts of money. And a lot of these writers have to have second jobs. And
And actors.
Again, that's a very common thing in labor in America, that people have to have more than one job. So the problem we have is these companies are enormously profitable. Like you're making huge amounts of money from the work that we create, and we can't pay our bills, we can't afford to live in the city where we're expected to work, and yet your company is making billions in profit. And the way the business changed was because of the streamers, they started doing shorter orders, and so they would be like 10 episodes as opposed to the old days where it was like 22. And again, we're not asking to go back to the old days and saying, you know, the business changed and you guys, it's your business, but if you want us to do this work, we should be able to make a living wage. We should be able to support ourselves. We're not, again, and there's a whole slew of people who've entered the business who see writing as kind of like, I don't know that I can afford to be a writer. And that's insane, given the profits the companies are making.
Yes. Hey, I want to make just a brief point here, because, and it speaks to sort of when we talk about this podcast, and, you know, we sign on and we say, it's a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. And obviously that's a joke. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we do and we don't. Right. We do, you know, we love having written. The process can be agonizing. But I think what the CEOs don't understand, and when you talk about someone having two jobs to have this job, is the enormous passion people have to do this, and that they really love their job. And so when you talk about AI, like, and for the writer's part, we can sit and debate what the realism of an AI coming up with a show. I don't know. But when you talk about on the acting side, scanning an extra so that you can use their face infinitely in the future so they won't have to come to set. You've taken the one job in America. That person would kill to be on set. Right. All that person wants to do in their life is be a small part of this huge thing. They want to have their face literally in the background. Everyone, if you talk to an extra, has probably sacrificed an enormous amount of their lives to be a presence on that set. They've gone to acting class to literally have not a foot in the door, a fucking toenail in the door to be on that set. And if you said to them, I'll pay you the same and you don't have to be here, I guarantee they would get down on their knees and beg you and tell you, no, I want to be here. I want to be on set. And everyone feels that way. Like if you talk to, you know, the wardrobe people, the hair people, everyone on a set has a story of how they got to the set, why they got to the set, what it means to them to be on the set. And that, you know, I think that what we're seeing is a disconnect on their side that they don't understand what we do. They spend very little time on sets. They don't understand how a writer's room works. They don't understand how their product gets made. And so, I told Alec earlier in the week, I was watching this stupid show on Netflix called QB. It's about quarterbacks. And there's this quarterback, Kirk Cousins. Everyone hates him. He's a cheeseball. And I was literally in tears because he went back to where he was on his first team and he won this meaningless game. And then his teammates gathered around him. But like, we do this. And here comes the emotional sneak attack. We do this because we love being a part of something, right? We want to be a part of something, you know, for whatever legacy means. But like, I feel like on the CEO class side, they want to be apart from everything. They want a private jet. They want to be behind a velvet rope. They want to be in a boardroom. They don't want to go into Disneyland the same entrance we do. They want a private club. And I just think that, like, look, be a part. Don't be apart. Be a part of something. Join us. Like, people are very fucking passionate. That's what we do this because we love it.
Right.
Yeah. And we want to be able to keep doing it.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Now, if I said that at the WGA meeting, do I get applause?
Yes, yes, you get applause.
Yeah. Come to the next meeting. Yeah.
No, I don't want to. That's why I did it here.
Wow.
I'll repeat it.
Be a part, don't be a part.
Oh, I think that passion that you're talking about, and I agree with you, is one of the reasons why.
And I hate writing.
One of the reasons we've put up with not getting paid enough, we've put up with not being able to support ourselves, is because we really do love this work, and they've taken advantage of that. And we're saying, you got to stop taking advantage of it. It's now, it's time to pay us. And that's always the thing that I talk about, is that in all the interactions that we have with studios, whether it's your individual deal for a show or in these union negotiations, is the writer's fear that I don't deserve to get to do this. They're going to take it away. And the company's understanding that.
Yes.
And understanding that we're desperate to be reasonable. We're desperate to get the deal. And it's like, if I talk too loudly, if I demand too much, they're going to just take it away. Not only that, this will not only be, I won't get this deal, I won't ever get another one.
They will.
Yeah, Goldie, that was a very well said, very nice, impassioned speech. And David, this is just a special episode pilot today. You've been very generous with your time. We're not going to keep you much longer. We know you have many things to do in your day. But just tell us for a minute, how do you feel? What's the feeling about how it went down with the DGA? Because now it's WGA and SAG on strike. Is there a feeling like, well, the DGA just kind of caved and took like a not great deal? Or is it like, good for them, they're happy?
I mean, the DGA made a deal that their members voted for. So clearly their membership feels like that's the deal they wanted. I'm not in that union. I don't know that I'm ever going to be. I think that they made what they thought is a very good deal, and I can't really judge it, honestly. But I judge it based on the support their own members give to it. And if their own members are happy with it and vote it up and say, yeah, this is what we wanted, I mean, the story's
over. Is that threshold 50%? Like, has a union ever rejected a deal in that you've heard of?
I think that happened. I don't want to misstate. I think it was SAG had a deal that was voted down by the membership at some point. I don't remember whether that was. And that might not be accurate. I may be misremembering. But yeah, the threshold is 50%, but they got like, I don't know, it was over 80. I
mean,
it was a strong upvote. So again, like, everybody looks after their own house, and that deal for the Directors Guild worked for them.
Yeah. As a quick impression of directors on set right now, and action. my cricket noise. Sorry.
Yeah, I got it.
Better
it was
whistler
good.
Than
was
I
funny.
Thought.
I laughed. I laughed at it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thank you. Now, before we let you go, do you have any kind of message for the writers who are listening right now in terms of, like, you know, a message of hope for us going forward?
Well, I mean, I think that I'm just so impressed, and this is probably where the emotional sneak attack is going to happen to me. I'm just so impressed with the members of our union, the way they stood up for themselves, that it's hot out there. They show up for the picket lines. They're determined. I know that many of them are scared. I know that many of them would like this to be over. Nobody wants it over more than me. but I also, I know that because of their strength and because of the determination and their understanding, not just of their own situation, but of their fellow union members. I've spoken to so many members who are like, well, I was still working in network television, so I was doing fine, but I see the reality of how the business has changed, and so this fight is very meaningful. And I've had that conversation numerous times. And then I've had other conversations with people who were really struggling and just got their first job and had to go out on the picket line a week later and yet understand, no, this is important. And that unity and that solidarity is going to win the day, and the companies will make a deal, and this will end, and it will be a much better deal than we walked away from on May 1st, and it's all because of the strength of the people in this union.
Well, that's a great message. That's a great message, and I can't think of a better way to wrap this up today. David, first of all, thank you for coming back here. I know that you are incredibly busy, especially these days, and I couldn't think of a better person to be at the tip of the spear, as you said. You've been through this before. You're great at it. Feels like capable hands. So we appreciate all the work that you're doing for all the writers out there, our entire union, and we wish you the best of luck going forward.
Well, thank you. So I always have a great time with you guys. Thanks for having me.
In the words of Airplane, good luck. We're all counting on you.
All right. Thank you, David Goodman.
Thank
you to all of our fans listening. Thank you, Goldie and JC, for always being awesome. We will talk to you again next week.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Be a part. Don't be a part.